Welcome back to another episode of the Young Turks, everybody. I'm Johnny Rolla. We are joined once again after like a year plus break, Abby Martin of the Empire Files on Telesur English. Fresh off a trip reporting live at the incredibly dangerous at times protests in Venezuela, at risk to your own life, as all the journalists and photographers there were. Very excited to have you back.
Thanks.
And Anna Kasparian back after a couple days away. Thank God.
Oh. I'm excited.
It's
nice to come back to this panel. Huh?
Exactly. Don't go. Stop it.
Falls apart.
I was in New York for Google's been doing really great work with criminal justice reform.
Oh, cool.
And so they're working with a lot of different organizations that are trying to put a stop to mass incarceration and some of the really heinous, you know, behavior that happens behind bars, like by correctional officers, like shackling women as they're going into labor. Mm-hmm. Just really bad stuff. So I really want to thank Google for hosting that event. It was really good.
Yeah. Cool. And Anna didn't actually want to come back. I had to encourage the Department of Education to roll back for-profit college regulations so that she would be forced to come and report on it.
True.
And it worked. They took the bait.
Yeah,
so we're going to be talking about that in the second hour, actually. Yeah, the show itself overall is not going to be one of the lighter, wackier shows. Obviously, there's been some incredibly serious news, both in the US and around the world, that we're going to be getting to throughout this first hour. But also a major lawsuit being filed by a couple of hundred Democrats in Congress. We have an update, a good update in from Flint, Michigan. And a coal mine has opened up. Is Donald Trump a hero? We're going to break that down at the close of today's first hour. But we're going to starting off with somewhat somber news. This morning, Virginia was the site of an apparently politically motivated mass shooting. The shooter targeted a group of Republican lawmakers, staffers, lobbyists, and others who were practicing for a charity baseball game. This was near the Eugene Simpson Stadium Park in Alexandria. Police received a call reporting shooting at around 7:09 a.m. and arrived just 3 minutes later. Representative Mo Brooks, who was on the scene, said that he heard about 50 shots. And as you'll hear later on, initially sporadic shooting, and then it eventually became very clear that this was an attack on the people playing baseball there. The assailant was shot by Capitol Police in a gunfight, taken to a hospital, died of his injuries later on in the morning. Now, multiple people have been shot, but House Majority Whip Steve Scalise was in what seemed like the worst condition initially, was taken to the hospital, underwent surgery, and remains in critical condition. There have been sort of sporadic reports about the condition of the others who were shot at the site, and it seems like they're doing in relatively better condition at this point. You know, this is as of when we're broadcasting live. We don't know when this goes up on YouTube what the state might be. But as I said, four others were shot, including Zachary Barth, a congressional staffer, Matt Mika, a lobbyist, and Special Agent David Bailey and Special Agent Crystal Greiner, two members of the Capitol Police, were attacked at that point. Now, Rand Paul was one of the lawmakers that was on the scene there, and he has described what it was like, and we're going to show you some of that video now.
The first shot was sort of an isolated shot. You know, I grew up in the South, and I just thought someone had discharged a shotgun, which isn't that unusual in the South. But then I thought, well, we are in the city. We're not in the country here. But then after the first shot, then there was a rapid succession of shots, you know, 5 or 10 shots in the field. I see Representative Scalise is shot but moving, and he's trying to drag himself through the dirt out into the outfield. There are two staffers in right field, only about 10 feet from me, but there's about a 20-foot fence separating me from them. And they were laying down, but then I'm seeing the shots hitting the dirt around them. And they're trying to make a difficult decision. Do we lay here, stay low, and hope he doesn't hit us? And this is a difficult decision, or does the shooter just advance and come closer and shoot you? And so you have to make a decision at some point whether to stay or run. But it takes a few minutes to determine. You're not sure where they're coming from. I mean, my instinct was they were coming from the third baseline. And as more shots were fired, we were pretty sure that was. But you're kind of not sure which side of the tree to stand on because you're not sure where the shots are coming from.
So we'll have a little bit more from Rand Paul a little bit later, but obviously when you're hearing him give that account, I mean, it sounds absolutely horrific. You don't expect to hear that sort of story at all, let alone involving senators. You expect, well, they've got to be protected at all times. There's got to be tons of bodyguards and everything. But while it's certainly tragic, it's not unknown. It's not particularly rare in the United States. I mean, today also there's a shooting in San Francisco at a UPS center. Three killed before the shooter killed himself. And I'm sure that their experience there was very similar to what Rand Paul was recounting in that video. And you know, there will be anywhere from 2 to 9 shootings of that sort in the United States today and tomorrow and the next day. That's the world that we've constructed for ourselves, that we've allowed to develop. It's particularly salient perhaps when it happens to politicians, but it's just as real every other day.
Yeah. Look, these are always incredibly difficult stories to report on. And I know that later on we're going to get into, you know, the political ramifications of all of this and how it's become politicized already. But just focusing specifically on the shooting and just how horrific it was, you're right. I mean, this has become too commonplace. Oftentimes, a lot of these shootings don't even get any media attention because they happen so often. And if we focused on mass shootings or shootings in general, that's the entire show, right? And so it becomes incredibly frustrating because it happens over and over again. After Sandy Hook happened, you know, there was somewhat of an assumption that there would be some action taken, something, and there was no real change, you know, and it'll continue happening. And so it's frustrating because everyone immediately goes to their corners. Everyone immediately starts blaming each other. Everyone immediately like stops taking responsibility. And look, one of the things that comes up with some of these shootings is the issue of rhetoric. And I think rhetoric is important. I don't care if it's Democrats, I don't care if it's Republicans. I think the way that we talk about individuals, especially our opponents, matters. Mm-hmm. And with that said, I think that we've moved so far away from being civilized, right? And we just demonize each other and antagonize each other over and over again, and we do it in like the cruelest ways. And you know, it's not good. We've created a toxic environment on top of a lack of gun regulation, on top of all the other issues or factors that play a role in these types of shootings. Yeah. That's my take on it.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, mass shootings obviously are a huge phenomenon that is really specific to America. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we're an empire. We carry out, you know, imperial killings, mass killings all around the world. Civilians are dying everywhere. Trump is ramping that up. But this seems to be different and more specific, almost like the Chris Dorner thing where he was targeting cops. This guy seemed to have a very specific motive and agenda, especially since he asked the guy, are those Republicans or Democrats? And, you know, I think, yes, all the stuff is flying out. You know, he was a Bernie supporter, just like in the wake of the Portland guy, people are just jumping to their corners. But it is interesting that, you know, A, he did target Republicans, and B, I mean, we are living in a country where there's this kind of xenophobic conspiracy that's painting Trump as treasonous alongside the entirety of the GOP. And some people could take that very seriously and act out. I almost feel like it's the reverse of the Pizzagate gunman, where, you know, this guy, rhetoric does matter, where this guy came to the pizza shop and could have killed people. And this guy almost could have taken the Russiagate conspiracy theory to a whole new level where he felt like he needed to take action in his own hands. It's completely horrible.
I disagree with you on it being a conspiracy theory. I think that there's actual evidence involving Russia and its involvement in our election. And the Pizzagate thing was absolute nonsense, right? Mm-hmm. The Seth Rich thing, and I know some of you who are, you know, overzealous about that issue, you're gonna get mad, but I don't care. There's no evidence to the Seth Rich story either, right? And so, yeah, there are conspiracy theories flying around, and there's a big problem with that. But I see, you know, Russia as being completely different from Pizzagate and from Seth Rich. That's just my take on it. I mean, I know some people disagree, but I mean, how many people involved in those investigations have shown that there was involvement by Russia? You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, a bunch of Democrats are just making it up and it's just a conspiracy by Democrats. No, you have Democrats and Republicans, elected officials, members of intelligence communities saying, no, Russia's a problem. And so drawing or shining a light on that is not the same as inciting violence, encouraging people to go out and take action against elected officials, violent action against them. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, I just think it's a different target than the majority of mass shootings in this country, where you have specific government officials. There's a clear agenda there. But I disagree about the Russia stuff. I still have not seen evidence that Russia did hack the election. I think that it's fair to say that they influenced it in some way, but I still have not seen evidence that they hacked it.
Well, I don't want to go off on too much of a tour. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. Like, I've heard The term hack the election, I've honestly only heard from people who don't believe that something happened. And maybe there are crazy libs saying that that's something that happened. I'm not familiar with that. Generally, there's a belief that in various ways the election was influenced. I don't think many people are claiming that the voting numbers were changed. But anyway, I think that that's
I don't believe that the election was influenced, okay? But I do think that Russia had an interest and attempted to hack into our election in some way or another. And what do I mean when I say hacking? Because that's a very broad word for a lot of people, right? Hacking, to me specifically, is attempting to interfere with software related to the election, right? And so there has been evidence of that. The Intercept reported evidence of that. Someone just got arrested because of leaking information.
But
that
was just like a phishing, that was just like kind of a soft attempt to just hack into some, like a couple people. I mean, I feel like that specifically to target that out.
Hundreds of government officials.
Right, but that's not rare though. That like to single out Russia just for that. I mean, that's happening with China. That's happening with other entities all the time. But I think we're getting off track here. I think it's interesting that you brought up Rand Paul. Because he, you know, I think last year tweeted, the Second Amendment is important specifically for when people want to target the government when it becomes tyrannical. And I think that, you know, it's just interesting that he was there on this baseball field recounting the horror of what happens when someone comes in and conducts one of these mass shootings. It's just an interesting kind of contradiction.
Yeah, I would argue that's the sort of rhetoric that we shouldn't see. In no way saying that he deserves to be there or anything like that. I would change that sort of rhetoric in the future. I think that there are people who are enthusiasts for the early years of America who love to throw around terms like watering the tree of liberty and everything. I think that that is very dangerous rhetoric too. Even though it sounds old timey, people take it very seriously. But yeah, and I know I mentioned to you before the show, someone was spreading a fake image of the shooter walking around with a sign with that tweet on it. It's not actually true, which doesn't stop it from being retweeted thousands of times.
Oh God.
But it's not actually true. You are right though that this does stand out because generally Republicans are not targeted in the same way. As Anna said, you know, not much has changed in terms of access to guns and all that. We have no idea if this guy theoretically could have been influenced by much of that. The only thing really that has changed since Sandy Hook is that, you know, 10 to 20 million more guns have been sold. And likely today and tomorrow, far more guns will be sold. We find that in every mass shooting. There is one thing that I do want to get to though that theoretically could have helped in this particular case. First, I want to read this tweet because while Republicans in this case were targeted by the shooter, it appears. Emma O'Connor reports that Representative Nanette Diaz-Berrigan tells me that multiple Democratic members of the House have already gotten calls in the wake of the shooting saying you guys are next. And linked to a screenshot of a number of tweets saying those sorts of things being sent to Democratic lawmakers. I'm sure Republicans as well. But one thing that I believe the TOT Politics for reporter Naomi is gonna have an article on this tomorrow. If we could bring up this next list here, you're gonna see a little bit of the information about the criminal background of the shooter. And there's some information, I generally don't like to spread the name of the person in this sorts of events, but it's there, do with it what you will. But this guy did have a history of arrests, not all of them involving violence directly, but some of them. And one back in 2006 assaulted his girlfriend, was found with multiple weapons, including a gun at that point. And at this point, thankfully, many people, including Naomi from TYT, have reported that if you go back and look at domestic terrorists and mass shooters, there's a very high correlation with acts of domestic violence against their partners. And so theoretically, if we took that a little bit more seriously, if we consider that as a possible place where a little bit more gun control could happen, and there have been attempts in some states, like Connecticut recently had something like that. Theoretically, with some more investigation and perhaps a bit more gun control in the wake of death threats against domestic partners, we might avoid a few mass shootings. We'd also avoid a lot fewer killed women, I think, in this country, because this is not, that is not even as rare as mass shootings.
Yeah, it's disgusting how you know, unserious law enforcement takes, you know, stalking of women, domestic battery against women,
threats of murder against women.
Yeah, exactly. And they just kind of poo-poo it. But this is what happens when you give people the ability to continue to do these kinds of things. Do you have any comment?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like there isn't going to be a solution to this.
Yeah.
Even though members of Congress have been attacked, even though it's actually affecting them negatively, I don't think that there is going to be much of a change.
Yeah.
And that's the frustrating part, that this is, for me, repetition over and over again, these devastating stories. And for me, it doesn't matter, you know, the victim's political ideology. It doesn't matter what they voted on or what their record is or who they've supported. None of that matters. At the end of the day, we're all people, right? Mm-hmm. And so no one should have to live in fear. No one should have to worry about possibly being the next victim. I mean, if I was a member of Congress right now, considering, you know, how polarized the country is, how toxic the environment is, how crazy people have become, I would be terrified. Yeah. I would want no part of it. And so I just, it's frustrating. Again, well, I don't see a solution to this.
To that point, I mean, was it Steve King's opponent? Was running against him.
Right.
Was it Steve King? I believe it was Steve King. And she just a couple of weeks ago dropped out saying, I've received, amongst other reasons, I've received many death threats and I just don't want to expose myself to that threat. And I even said that, I mean, I totally understand why you'd feel terrorized, and I'm sure, especially because it's the supporters of Steve King, they must be incredibly vicious and violent in many cases, especially online. I don't think there's a woman in this country that has existed in social media online for a number of years and hasn't gotten death and rape threats.
Yep.
But yeah, it's just becoming more common, and now, in hindsight, it looks like her move might have been very wise.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I don't think there will be any legislative solution because the companies that pay these lawmakers are going to continue to have a profit motive to sell more guns. They benefit financially when mass shootings happen. And we can moderate our rhetoric, but we're a country of 330 million people, a country of more than 300 million guns. There will always be people ready to commit acts of political violence unless we do everything we can beyond just rhetoric to try to stop it.
In the wake of Sandy Hook, you would think that that would be the time when everyone would galvanize together. 41 GOP senators blocked gun control there. But I do think that this, again, I think that this is different than other mass shootings where you can say, you know, it doesn't matter the political ideology of this person because they're obviously insane. Clearly this guy was mentally unstable. He had a history of domestic violence, but he also called the GOP terrorists back in 2014. And we know that this is the most criminal, like audaciously planet destroying. they're going to remove healthcare from millions of Americans. I mean, I just think it's an interesting facet that maybe we should look at this guy's political ideology and understand why he felt like these people were a target that he should carry out.
Yeah.
It's very.
We're a violent country. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
If it's not fear or you're either motivated by fear or anger, either way, you're supposed to fight. One of the congressmen that I think was at the scene, many of them were talking to me about their experience. And one of them said, this is what we do in America. If someone punches us, we punch back. That's just what we've been taught since we were 1 year old. You punch back, you punch back. And if they punch you, you punch them with two hands, you blow their head open. That's just the way we are. So if we're afraid or if we're angry, this is what we do, we attack. Now, what they also said, his point was, we're still gonna have this baseball game tomorrow, which is fine, right? This is where the change will be, to your point, Anna. This is a numbered group of people, powerful people. Mm-hmm. They can change the security protocol. They can change the number of security that's around them. Mm-hmm. What saved their lives, I don't know if we're gonna get to this with Rand Paul's statement about it. What saved from a massacre was that there was Capitol Police people there. And the only reason those two Capitol Police were there was because Scalise, who happened to be the one congressman that was shot, he's in leadership. And so that's the reason they're there. If not for him even being on the team, it'd have been a lot worse, they speculate. So that could be the change that would happen. I don't know how, logistically, how it happened, but suddenly every congressperson could have some kind of security protocol.
Right.
Rand Paul
said,
I go to gas stations and grocery stores. Now they're worried about it.
Yeah.
Perfectly, I understand that. But now this the Sandy Hook kids, what are they gonna do? They're gonna start giving security to everyone in the country that has to deal with a mass shooting. We don't know when it's gonna happen next. These guys are named people.
Yeah.
They're gonna protect them. That's the shame.
I'm honestly surprised that after Gabby Giffords, there wasn't more individual security, especially because that wasn't that many years ago. I would expect that sort of change probably will happen and probably should, I would say. But that doesn't help the average person.
Absolutely.
It doesn't help people in San Francisco.
Let's give teachers guns.
New York. Yeah. Well, that was the solution they wanted in the wake of Sandy Hook. Or put more armed guards, you know, to stand over kindergartners all day long. So theoretically, that's a change that they like to make. But actually, I want to turn to something slightly different. If you can prep video 4, we'll jump ahead of that. So I've been worried for months now, since probably the inauguration, that while I am scared at a lot of the potential changes that Donald Trump is talking about, the healthcare plan is going to be absolutely devastating. It's going to kill tens of thousands of people every single year. I've been worried that when inevitably, because of the world we live in, the first big domestic act of terrorism happens, that that might be the time when not necessarily Trump, but his circle leaps into action and uses that in the same way that 9/11 was used to make massive changes like the Patriot Act and things like that. So look, this is not that sort of terror attack necessarily, but we saw how he used the dropping of the Moab in Afghanistan, the bombing of the airfield in Syria to get a little bit of good press coverage. So I was worried about that, but Donald Trump did speak earlier today. We're going to play some of his remarks and then analyze.
Our brave Capitol Police perform a challenging job with incredible skill, and their sacrifice makes democracy possible. We also commend the brave first responders from Alexandria Police, Fire and Rescue, who rushed to the scene. Everyone on that field is a public servant. Our courageous police, our congressional aides, who work so tirelessly behind the scenes with enormous devotion, and our dedicated members of Congress who represent our people. We may have our differences, but we do well in times like these to remember that everyone who serves in our nation's capital is here because, above all, they love our country.
I'm not good with a teleprompter either. I'm just gonna admit that up front. But it's a very serious event. He has to read off the teleprompter. It's perfectly fine. I'm not a Republican attacking Obama or anything like that.
Speaking off the cuff.
Yes, and I would have to say this is just his initial statements. God only knows what will happen in the next 24 hours. But it doesn't appear that, like, I didn't get a House of Cards vibe off of that. It doesn't seem like they're going to attempt to use this, but God only knows it'll happen in the next 24
hours. I'm actually pretty shocked and also happy with the way Trump has handled it so far. I mean, I'm probably speaking too soon, and by the time this video gets uploaded onto YouTube, I'm gonna, you know, wish I hadn't said this.
We'll be invading Qatar.
Right. But I'm glad that, look, there are a lot of people online that are politicizing this immediately, right? And trying to use it for their own agenda. But I'm glad that we're at least not seeing that from Trump and his administration yet.
Yeah, because really the only thing that he can say is talk about gun control, right? And the Bernie stuff and Hillary stuff, and of course they're not going to touch gun control.
Yeah, I think what the you Bernie said, stuff he'll tweet tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. At 4 a.m.
That's
Kofi
my prediction.
But no, it was interesting. Right before we went to the clip, you said, you know, the good press coverage from dropping the Moab and the Syria bombing. I mean, how disturbing is that?
Yeah.
To get bipartisan good press,
you know, using poetic like terminology horrific, and.
It's sick. It's absolutely sick. And you know, where was Trump on, you know, when the Portland shooter massacred those people? It's just, I'm really obviously he has to say something about this. It's a horrific event that took place in the nation's capital against congressmen. But I just wish that he could extend the same sympathy to other horrific events like this.
Did he ever speak out against the victims of Dylann Roof's shooting?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
I don't remember any public statements from him. And it's
easy to predict which ones he's going to comment on if you know a couple of demographic bits of info.
And by the way, I could be completely wrong and he might have maybe said something that I missed. But it's interesting the types of shootings, you know, especially when you consider the shooter and the motive, what certain people will speak out against and then of course refuse to speak out against.
Or call it terrorism too.
You know,
a lot of people are like, oh, we can't call it terrorism yet. It's like, well, if the guy was Muslim, I'm sure that would be the first thing out of your mouths. But of course, that's just a tired trope. But it's absurd the way that these are covered.
So let's turn to another angle that we've sort of alluded to. Once a shooter or a terrorist name gets out there, we mine the internet to find out as much information about them as possible. Unfortunately, a lot of the time they find the wrong person. That person's life becomes a living hell for a few days. It doesn't look like that happened in this case. But they found this guy online and found that thanks to his Twitter activity and Facebook activity, that he absolutely despised Republicans, despised Donald Trump in particular, had previously said things about Scalise, one of the congresspeople that he shot. But also that he had liked Bernie Sanders at some point, that he had apparently volunteered for Bernie Sanders. And so many in media on the right, even some liberals, thought, ka-ching, I can cash in on this and I can drive home a narrative I want. And so the attacks against Bernie Sanders, against Bernie Sanders supporters began immediately. Bernie Sanders did not need to comment on this, but to his credit, he did, both in written form and eventually on the floor of Congress, which we're going to show you right now.
I have just been informed that the alleged shooter at the Republican baseball practice this morning is someone who apparently volunteered on my presidential campaign. I am sickened by this despicable act, and let me be as clear as I can be. Violence of any kind is unacceptable in our society, and I condemn this action in the strongest possible terms. Real change can only come about through nonviolent action, and anything else runs counter to our most deeply held American values. I know I speak for the entire country in saying that my hopes and prayers are that Representative Scalise, congressional staff, and the Capitol police officers who were wounded make a quick and full recovery. I also want to thank the Capitol Police for their heroic actions to prevent further harm.
So I'm glad that he made that comment. What I noticed from especially the first half where he condemns political violence is that it is the message that he has been delivering for over 41 years of service as a politician in America. And the people who are trying to say that that he or his ideology could in any way be responsible for some crazy person who for, you know, maybe up to 6 months supported Bernie Sanders, at least during the primary, seems to have turned against him in the general election, that he could be responsible, has never listened to Bernie Sanders speak.
Right.
Has never understood, well, really fast. So one of the things about Bernie Sanders that we all sort of understood early on, but people seem to have forgotten, is one of the benefits of Bernie Sanders is that he doesn't just draw in traditional Democrats or traditional libs. His appeal is broader than that. That means that moderates like him, also a lot of conservatives like him, or at least some of his policies. God only knows what this guy's background was 5 years ago or 10 years ago. We don't know. And when you point out in the wake of a terror attack or a shooting, an act of violence, sometimes on TYT, we've criticized the rhetoric coming out of particular media figures or particular politicians, especially Donald Trump during the campaign. Mm-hmm. And you might think that this is hypocritical to not think that Bernie Sanders is responsible now. But politicians are not responsible for what their supporters do in the abstract. They're responsible when you can point to the rhetoric they use that encouraged violence. And Donald Trump did that multiple times during the primary and during the general election, both in the abstract saying that violence against people who oppose him would be okay, but also against particular politicians. And that's been the case with people in the right-wing media in the past too. So if Bernie Sanders had said, you know, the 1% has got too much money, so you should chop their heads off, sure, yeah, he'd be responsible.
Right,
but exactly. That's not an actual quote, look it up.
Yeah, so look, again, for the billionth time, I do think rhetoric matters from both sides, right? But I also think that you can't just conflate what one person believes with what an entire movement believes or what a couple people believe. So like my issue is, you can only hold Bernie Sanders responsible for what has come out of his mouth. He has not once incited violence, not once. And if you have an example, if you're a conservative who's convinced that his rhetoric is the same as Trump's, please provide the evidence, because I would love to see it, where he has ever called anyone a criminal or a rapist, where he has demonized an entire group of people or an entire religion as being terrorists and being dangerous and being extremists. Give me the examples. Now, if you want to talk about some on the left who might incite violence using rhetoric, maybe those cases do happen and we speak out against it. Kathy Griffin's ridiculous photo, we spoke out against it. It wasn't helpful, it was really bad imagery, and you don't want to, you know, encourage anyone to do anything dangerous or violent, okay? But blaming Bernie Sanders is ridiculous. And I'm not just talking to conservatives who are doing it, because we see liberals doing it as well. Hardcore Hillary supporters.
Joy
that
Reid.
Were
ups,
Joy Reid's tweets.
She needs to reel it back in, okay?
It's like a horrible take, Joy. Okay. Every day, horrible take. I mean, you hit it on the head, Anna, when you said that this conflation between whatever the alt-right is with this alt-left idea, which doesn't exist, right? And it's trying to conflate the actual violence being incited undoubtedly by Trump and his supporters from the top down, the state down, to people who just like Bernie Sanders, who's advocating nonviolence. I mean, and even this guy, he abandoned Bernie Sanders and embraced Hillary's campaign, and he just kept going along with Hillary. I mean, so it's absurdly disingenuous.
Well,
to
I think
zero
he eventually, something I didn't.
He
tweeted some things after the election that seemed more supportive of Hillary, but I read that he said that you should either theoretically write in Bernie or vote for Jill Stein.
But then later on, he said he focused on just Donald Trump and said Hillary didn't do anything wrong, lock him up.
But I think that's after the election.
After the election.
But it doesn't matter anyway.
It doesn't matter.
Hillary's not responsible. Jill Stein's not responsible.
Exactly. The only person who's responsible is the shooter. And anyone who might have encouraged him, and at this moment, we don't know who encouraged him. We don't know if anyone incited violence and that encouraged him. We don't know. The one thing that we do know without a shadow of a doubt is that Bernie Sanders is not responsible for this. He does not condone violence. He has never, ever, ever encouraged violence. And to use, you know, your disdain for Bernie Sanders or use this horrible tragic event in order to show your disdain for Bernie Sanders really shows that you just have an agenda, that you don't really care about the facts, you don't really care about who Bernie Sanders is as a person, you just want to place the blame on an individual who, again, is not responsible for this at all.
Yeah, I mean, the guy wrote into his local paper saying Rachel Maddow was his favorite show, and of course she was the main pioneer of Trump is treasonous, the GOP is treasonous, the Russiagate thing, even though we disagree on that. But I mean, so why zero in on Bernie Sanders but nothing about this? It's just completely disingenuous and horrible.
Yeah, and so I know that we already mentioned it. So I know that she is just one person who has done this, and there are a lot others. But that the Joy Reid tweet really just, I mean, I know all week she's been awesome about Bernie Sanders. So I called her out on Twitter. Like, she took some fake fact that was tweeted to her and just agreed with it, that Bernie's his entire career has been propped up by the NRA.
What?
It was. The simple search shows that he's gotten deep
that was her take.
from gun control groups from gun rights groups his entire career. And look, I know, like, parties are complex, there are multiple factions. The idea that the people who are trying to keep things the way they've always been in the Democratic Party are simply going to lay down and let the new group take over, I knew that was never gonna happen. But we can have an actual debate about things we have said, things we have done and advocated for. We are not gonna have that debate by making up ridiculous BS and smearing a guy who has more integrity than possibly any other politician in Washington at this point as being propped up by the NRA and responsible for acts of mass violence.
You know, commenting on this is one of the most annoying things because I can't win, right? And I don't really care about winning, but you have like the hardcore Bernie supporters who think I'm a corporatist or elitist shill. And then you have the Hillary people that are like, you're part of the reason why Hillary lost the election.
I get those tweets every day.
Yeah, everyone hates me. Everyone thinks we're terrible, whatever. I don't care, okay? But what I do care about is just keeping it real with both sides, and especially the side that Joy Reid is on, okay? And I'm talking about Democrats here, not Republicans at all. Okay, look, if you're frustrated at the fact that Hillary lost the election, instead of getting angry and antagonizing people, how about you listen to them and listen to their actual concerns, right? Just listen to their concerns, because demonizing them and antagonizing them will not bode well for you or your party 2 years from now or a year and a half from now, and certainly not 3.5 years from now.
Yeah.
Like, wake up. Yeah. They're just so bitter about the fact that they lost, and they refuse to just some behavior correction. Yeah. Just realize, hey, maybe we're not listening to these people. Maybe they have real, genuine concerns that we need to represent. Anyway.
Yeah, they're incapable of self-critique, and that's the problem with establishment Democrats, is they can't look at why they lost, how they can win. I mean, if Corbyn wasn't, you know, revealing of how the left actually does have a lot of standing and could gain a lot of ground, I mean, it's just absurd. So again, the conflation of trying to tie this horseshoe theory where you're so left that you're right, you know, and it's just apologizing for this.
Yeah, and one thing, like, I'm at some point gonna have to actually sit down and organize my thoughts on this, because I'm probably not gonna make a ton of sense. There's this weird idea, and I see it on the left and on the right. There's this obsession with showing how ideologically pure you are, and a belief
so
that there is, yes, and there's people who believe that there's one spectrum you can be on, and super lefty is on this side and super right is on that side, and as you do things and say things, you're just moving to the left and the right. We're always trying to find where people are on that. That's not how life is. Life is much more complicated than that. You can move more progressive or more conservative, but you can also move more wise, less wise, more foolish, more violent, more aggressive. Those are not the same thing. You can have whatever positions you want on politics, but you can also be a real fucking asshole too.
Yeah.
And that is a separate thing. It doesn't make you more left or more right. And so I think that plays into the horseshoe thing, where like the idea that if you're more violent, you are thereby more conservative or more progressive. No, those are different things. Mm-hmm. People need to be analytical, but not just about their political values and their political goals, but also everything else that makes a human.
they're just so desperately just trying to smear Bernie and his supporters that that's the lengths that they'll go.
Yes.
You know, and that's what's so sad.
The world's an irrational place. Anyway, we are going to take our first break now. There is a lot of other news that we want to get to. Obviously, we're going to be keeping track with those still in the hospital from this shooting, from the other shootings as well, by the way, because of course others have died probably during the filming of this video and more mass shootings around America. But we are going to take a break. Tweet us at hashtag TYT Live what you think about the stories we've already discussed. We'll be back with more news after this. Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. John and Abby Martin returning after a long break, and Anna Kasparian as well. Lots more news to get to, but I do have a few announcements and a few tweets I want to read. And I had something I wanted to say, and I'm just hoping it comes back to me. But anyway, Daniel Perea, who I believe I read a tweet from yesterday, says shooting political opponents is completely unacceptable. Beat them with ballots, not bullets. Mm-hmm. I like that. That's good. Let's see. Jeff Waldorf says the Virginia shooter obviously missed the point of Bernie Sanders, which I think is more common than we accept. A lot of people, you can love someone and not fundamentally understand the entire point of them. Let's see. And Only Love Prevail says the terminally ignorant will conflate anything.
That's the biggest iPad I've ever seen.
It's too big. It's
That's
stupid
big.
Why is it this big? I feel ridiculous.
It just looks like a computer just flattened. It's just like crazy.
We've gone too far into the future. Let's see, what was that I had to say? I don't remember. Okay, so a couple of announcements. Apparently last minute there is not going to be an Aggressive Progressives tonight, but it will be back next week on Thursday. But in the meantime, you can watch the show that they shot live last Friday at the People's Summit by going to tytnetwork.com/AP. And you will see the featured guests, Jordan Sheraton, Namiki Konst, Crystal Ball, Sam Ronan, and more. So hopefully that will tide you over until the next episode next week. There will, however, be a new TYT Old School tonight. That's 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific time with Ben Mankiewicz, Wes Clark Jr. and Mark Thompson, which is about as old school as it can get with jank not in the country. And you can watch that at tytnetwork.com under members content, assuming you are actually a member. If you're not, at this point, I think you can figure it out. And I still don't remember what I was going to say, so we're just going to push on then.
Is this the last week that jank is gone? Everything's kind of like a blur right
I don't actually know. It's possible he might be gone some of next week as well. He has a lot that he's working on, admittedly.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we're going to push on to a little bit of breaking news. I had read earlier today that Robert Mueller, the special counsel, had met with the heads of the Senate Intelligence Committee involved in obviously the ongoing investigation. And we'd all wondered, what is it that they discussed? I don't know for sure that this is what it is, but it seems likely. It has been revealed that the special counsel will be investigating Trump personally for possible obstruction of justice. I mean, well, I don't know what kind of case he could possibly have at this point with the firing of James Comey and the revelation from someone who spoke with Trump yesterday that the ambiguity he put out over the past 48 hours over possibly firing the special counsel was designed to put pressure on the special counsel to quickly sweep the entire thing under the rug, which is, of course, by itself obstruction of justice, but also just from an anonymous source at this point. Now, I'm not particularly surprised by this. I thought that's what the special counsel was investigating this whole time. But now it is actually out there. That is going to be one of the components of the investigation.
Yeah, I just feel like if there is nothing to worry about, why fire James Comey? Why, you know, flirt with the idea of firing Mueller? Everything seems very strange to me. And I feel like it doesn't automatically mean that someone's guilty or that there's some shady stuff happening behind the scenes, but it does make people more suspicious. And so if I was being investigated for having questionable ties to Russia, I'd be like, have at it. You can look through my email, you can look through whatever you want, right?
I'm gonna take you up on that.
Okay, but it's strange how far he's going in trying to do away with this investigation.
But it's also Donald Trump who's said on record that he does not forgive, not forget, right? Like Julian Assange style. I mean, he really goes after people who fuck him over. I mean, he said this time and again that he will go to the end of the earth for revenge. I don't know what happened, but I think Trump is honestly stupid enough to fire someone and not realize that's obstruction of justice. I mean, how great would it be if he was impeached over this? It's amazing, just him firing this guy without realizing that could actually get him fired, even if there was no connection with Russia. It's amazing.
I think you're right. I mean, it could be that his messed up psychology makes him look constantly like a person who is doing incredibly suspicious things. And that seems to fit with what we know about him. But we can look at his circle too. I mean, yeah. Jeff Sessions, his weird quasi, I'm gonna use executive privilege without actually using it and refusing to answer questions about conversations he's had with Trump. I mean, Sessions was also being incredibly suspicious. And I know what you're thinking. Look at his face. That's a weird looking guy. He probably acts weird too. And you've got a point, but it's still suspicious.
Also, you know, his refusal to release tax returns and just all of this stuff, it all kind of plays into this larger, you know, it's a piece of a larger puzzle. And if you want this investigation to go away, the best thing for you to do is to cooperate with the investigation if you're innocent, right? If there's no wrongdoing, and it'll go away. Yeah. It'll go away.
But I think that what you were saying before, Anna, is let's clarify the messaging here, because I think the Democrats have a really poor ability to explain what the Russia collusion is. So you have people actually saying it was hacked, but really it's most likely that Trump just has business dealings, right? Mm-hmm. And some sort of collusion financially. So why not just say that?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I don't understand.
I like that you brought this up, because this was a discussion we were having during the break. And just to give you guys some context. Yeah, so look, I think that a lot of people are confused and have different interpretations of this whole Russia investigation, mm-hmm. right? And you're absolutely right. Some people think, you know, oh, did Russia hack into our systems and change votes? No, I mean, I don't think anyone's saying that. But I think Democrats are failing at, you know, clear and concise messaging as to what they think the real issue is. And I argue that the real issue, it's more of a conflict of interest issue, right?
Yes.
And even before Trump got elected, I believe it was Michael Isikoff published a piece about Trump's financial ties to Russia, which are very relevant, because if you owe Russia a ton of money, right, are you more likely to push for policies that favor Russia as opposed to the American people? Those are issues that should be looked into, mm-hmm. right? So that's the kind of stuff that I think Democrats, if they're genuinely concerned about shady dealings, should focus on and do better messaging on.
Yes.
But by saying like collusion, most people don't even know what collusion is. Mm-hmm. And saying hacking, well, what do you mean by hacking? Yeah. That immediately makes people brush this off as not a big deal or not something that should be investigated. When in reality, I think it should be investigated, but I do not believe for a second that Russia had anything to do with the outcome of the election. Mm-hmm. The Hillary supporters who keep pushing that narrative are ridiculous. Hillary was a flawed candidate. She needs to take responsibility for it. You guys need to take responsibility for it. And more than anything, focus on why it is the Democrats lost and you know, do behavior correction there.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Trump's collusion, he has collusion with every country in the world. He's the first bona fide brand to basically win this ridiculous reality show that we call.
And we're actually going to get to that in just a little bit on our next.
Yeah, and the whole, I mean, I wish that Trump actually reversed on the policies. There has been no detente whatsoever. The sanctions are in place and the Cold War is resurrected. I mean, I would have liked, that was like the one good thing that I thought would come out of his presidency is some sort of normalization with Russia. Instead, it's the opposite.
So a couple more things we want to get to. Obviously, we're running a little bit low on time at this point. Really fast, I did remember what I wanted to say. As predicted, oddly enough, mass shootings no longer false flags now that Trump has been elected. Weird. The conspiracy theorists accept that shootings happen now. Weird.
Finally.
How quickly that turnaround happened. Anyway, let's turn overseas briefly. Early this morning, a massive fire tore through the Grenfell Tower apartment building in West London. At the time of the fire, hundreds, up to possibly 600, I've seen in some estimates, were believed to be in the apartment building. Many of them trapped at least temporarily inside of it as the fire continued. It's believed to have broken out on one of the bottom floors, but quickly spread to engulf all 24 floors there, as you're seeing in those very difficult. I mean, that's just
horrifying.
It's horrifying, yes. And I know that London, obviously, this has been their day, basically, is dealing with this unbelievable fire. Tragically, many did die already, and the number is expected to go up. The Metropolitan Police Commander there said, sadly, I can confirm that there are now 12 people that have died that we know of. This is going to be a long and complex recovery operation, and I do anticipate that the number of fatalities will sadly increase beyond those 12, possibly significantly higher. At the time, 40 fire trucks and more than 20 ambulances were sent to the scene. 68 patients were taken to 6 hospitals. Some people were able to go to hospitals on their own, and many are still in critical condition. Now, as this has been going on, as the fire was continuing to be put out, and now the search for either survivors or the mortal remains is going on, people are wondering what caused this. How did this absolutely terrible fire happen and spread so quickly? We do know that a major refurbishment was completed last year to that building. It's a multi-million dollar refurbishment. The cause of the fire, not immediately known, but a tenant group had complained for years that the management company wasn't taking the threat of fire seriously. This is the Grenfell Action Group that wrote in 2013, residents experienced a period of terrifying power surges that were subsequently found to have been caused by faulty wiring, and that our attempts to highlight the seriousness of this event were covered up by that's the organization that maintains the building, and by borough officials. And there's been a lot of talk about the replacement of the cladding on the outside of the building, that it was replaced. Some people say it was mainly replaced to make the building look cosmetically more attractive, but that theoretically it could have made it more vulnerable to fire. That is simply something that's going around. We do not know if that had anything to do with how the fire spread.
So if it is found that faulty wiring was the cause of this fire, look, I think that it's just one of many examples that there are some regulations that matter, right? And so, you know, if you put this in the US context, if you ever want to do any type of, let's say, refurbishment or remodeling or whatever in your home, you have to go get permits. And if you do electrical or plumbing work, you got to go get permits. And it's super annoying, right?
Yeah, why would this be on your mind now?
Anyway, it's super annoying, but at this, look, there's a right way to do it, which is the legal way to do it, where you get the permits. And the permits are there for a reason, okay? It's to ensure that the work is done by a licensed professional. You're talking about electricity, you're talking about the potential for a disastrous fire, right? So regulations like that make sense. There's also the wrong way of doing it, where you don't take out the permits, you don't, you know, hire someone who's licensed,
yeah,
and then you take a gigantic risk. And don't take that risk. If you're a management company, you are putting so many lives at risk. And it just breaks my heart to know that if the faulty wiring is what caused this situation, breaks my heart that these people, you know, just didn't care enough about the well-being of individuals living in that building to actually do the right thing.
Clearly criminal negligence. I mean, it says that there was complaints for years that the building was a potential fire hazard. I mean, it's crazy to look at the last century and see how much horrific, deadly fires really defined the century. And that bred, you know, obviously regulations. And we don't see these things happen anymore. Like when the Oakland warehouse fire happened a couple months ago, it was so devastating because it was preventable.
Yes.
Because regulations are in place and these people need to be held accountable and criminally charged, because it needs to set an example for people that you cannot just cut costs.
Yes.
Because people will die.
Yeah.
And it's horribly tragic.
Yeah, and look, at the end of the day, we all know what happens if you deregulate and you allow people to run their businesses or their companies the way that they see fit. Like, if they have a bottom line, if they have a profit motive, yeah, they're gonna cut costs. And one of the ways of cutting costs is, you know, maybe not doing the job properly or hiring professionals who are actually experts for what they're about to do.
Or putting off doing the job for another year or two.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, hopefully that's a lesson that's learned from this. Although, again, we don't know exactly what caused the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're gonna take a very short break at this point. When we come back, a major lawsuit has been launched against Donald Trump. We're gonna break down all the reasons behind it after this break. Welcome back to the first hour of the Young Turks, everybody. Anna, Abby, and John, you figure out which is which. But we've got a little bit more news that we want to cover, so we're going to jump right into it. I would love to read your tweets, but time is quickly running out. A group of nearly 200 Democratic lawmakers have filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump, alleging that he's violating a clause of the Constitution by accepting payments from foreign governments. Now, we've been covering those payments he's accepted since the inauguration here on TYT, but now the legal repercussions. This is not the first lawsuit against him, but this is the first to have 200 lawmakers. It includes 30 senators and 166 members of the House of Representatives as of right now, although I wouldn't be surprised if that swelled in the next few weeks. In case you're not familiar with the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, because you're a regular person, it prohibits the US president from receiving, quote, any present, emolument, office, or title of any kind, whatever, from a foreign government or its dignitaries without the express consent of Congress. It's based on this ridiculous notion that the president shouldn't be getting bribed by foreign dignitaries.
Just by weirdos. Corporations in the United States.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, the president and everyone else.
Right.
It's a level playing field leveled with money.
Right.
So now let's talk about a couple of the things that theoretically could indicate that he has violated this clause. Trump's new downtown DC hotel has hosted embassy events for Azerbaijan and Kuwait, who switched to the Trump Hotel from their original booking at the Four Seasons. The hotel hosted an annual conference sponsored by the Turkish state last month, a conference that in previous years was habitually held at the Ritz-Carlton, but you don't get as much bang for your buck going to the Ritz anymore, apparently. A Saudi-backed lobbying campaign spent around $270,000 at the hotel for lodging and catering costs.
What?
And by the way, and this is something that Abby alluded to earlier on the show, Trump was recently granted a long coveted trademark by the Chinese government. It's the result of a 10-year legal battle that turned his way after he became the Republican nominee for president, oddly enough. That's one trademark. There have literally been dozens given to the Trump organization since then. Now, we can't say in all of those cases that they wouldn't have gotten them otherwise, including a couple that came about just a day or two ago. But it is possible that that was involved in it. But as I said, there are multiple legal cases against him, basically all around the same topic. But the difference is that not every group that's lodging these lawsuits has the same standing to claim that they've been damaged by him receiving these foreign payments. But what's interesting is the way that the Democratic representatives and senators are claiming that. Jerry Nadler, who's a Democrat of New York, says, "We are injured by being denied our right to vote on this. That's our standing, because in that description I gave you, it says that Congress can theoretically give him permission to accept payments. But in all of these cases, they were not advised, which theoretically harms them."
Right. What I'm curious about is how this plays out and whether or not, you know, it's considered some sort of ridiculous loophole because it's not direct payments and it's a payment through his businesses and his business entities, which, by the way, he claimed he was going to step back from, but he never really did. Right. And so I don't know if there's a loophole. I have to be honest with you. I feel as though this isn't going to materialize into anything because Trump seems to be a little untouchable. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, how much nepotism is involved in the White House. It doesn't matter how much conflict of interest is involved in what he's doing. People seem to continuously give him a pass. And then, you know, any type of action against him is seen as a political move as opposed to a move that's meant to help protect and represent the American people. So I don't know how it's going to play out. I'm curious to see, but I do see it as a big problem when foreign governments are, you know, essentially using their financial power to sway him in any which way.
Swamp drained. I mean, the whole thing, I think it is
foreign swamps myself.
I think it is symbolic. And also the impeachment, I mean, you have to have a majority to push this through, right? So I think in a way it is symbolic, but this also goes back to the horrible messaging of the Democratic Party because you're focusing on something that actually Americans don't really care about. I mean, they've proven that they don't care about the tax returns and they don't care about the fact that Trump is a bona fide brand that has conflicts of interest all over the fucking world. Mm-hmm. I mean, they voted him in for president. So I think that this, I never understood how he was able to legally run based on his conflicts. Mm-hmm. I never really understood that. So this is kind of like, all right, too little too late to try to do something about this.
Maybe, I mean, we'll see. I agree that people seem in certain aspects of his life, they are incredibly willing to forgive anything, you know, grab him by the pussy and stuff like that, his personal stuff, also his business stuff. But now that he's the president, I do think that some cases you can, like you can put together a 30-second ad that very clearly involves foreign bribery. And I do think that Americans, like for right or wrong, we are a xenophobic country. And it's possible that sort of thing would trigger, even amongst some people who theoretically are part of his base, an idea that I don't really like him being influenced by the Saudis. Isn't that a little bit weird?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
And just to quickly comment on, you know, his tax return thing. Look, there have been polls indicating that even conservatives want him to release his tax forms, right? Yeah. That doesn't necessarily mean that they would vote against him if he doesn't, but people want to see it and he refuses to put it out there. So I think that's interesting. But also what voters care about the most, his voters care about the most, if you're actually, you know, a Democrat who wants to use a strategy that works and that's smart, focus on economic issues, right?
Right.
And they don't. They don't focus on it enough. And it's because they're swayed by the same corporate interests that Republicans are swayed by. And look, I think Democrats are slightly better on economic issues. But, you know, Talk about, you know, the coal plant story that we're not going to get to today. Are we going to get to it?
If we can do it quickly.
Yeah, let's do please do it.
Let's talk about one of those corporations and how the overlap between them and government
officials. Let me just finish my thought real quick.
No.
Those are the stories that matter, right?
Yes.
Those are the issues that matter. He said he was going to create jobs. Has he created jobs? How many jobs?
He has.
Why is he cutting all these taxes for the
wealthiest
people?
He has created
people?
A whopping...
Yeah, we're going to show you.
Okay.
Sorry, no, I just want to demonstrate your point because you're of course exactly right. Okay, Donald Trump said during the campaign that he was going to bring back all of those lost coal jobs. And now, what do you know? A coal mine has actually opened up. The first coal mine that's opened up since he became, you know, whatever political position he has that I'm not going to say. So is it mission accomplished? Well, his specific claim, he said this recently, when I ended the war on coal, it was a rough war, so many died. I said I would put our incredible miners, and that's what you are, incredible, back to work. And he wasn't talking about the abstract, he was talking about a particular coal mine, the one that we're addressing in this video, opened by Corsa. And in fact, it has opened and it has brought jobs back. Corsa executives forecast the creation of 70 to 100 jobs in the new mine. Which is good for those 70 to 100 families. That is very good. But as writers at Quartz have pointed out, that's significantly fewer than the 92 jobs created by the opening of one American supermarket on average. It's also probably two Dunkin' Donuts, I would say, maybe three. Personally, I'd prefer more Dunkin'. Now, also for context, those 70 to 100 jobs will be a bit of a drop in the coaly bucket of the 191,000 jobs that the mining industry has lost since 2014. Now, the mining industry is obviously larger than just coal, but I mean, you're talking about a big thing there. And let's bring up this chart. It's gonna show you the trend over time. I don't know that this mine is going to reverse that. And of course, you know, we could get into the morality and the long-term environmental effect of if we did get back all those jobs and if we did bring all that mining back that we've apparently moved on from as an economy. But it seems like it's simply, it's for his base. Many of them don't work in coal, obviously. It's got something like 50,000 jobs in the entire industry. But a lot of Americans like the idea of it. And
which
they think
so
America wussy. Should be on coal, not stupid wussy wind and solar.
So it's weird because there's like this paradox where you have Trump voters saying that they voted for him due to economic issues. They lost their jobs, things have been shipped overseas, and they really want to get their jobs back. But at the same time, they continuously hurt themselves by speaking out or at least just being against creating jobs in renewable energy. If you look at California alone, California's largest increase in jobs has come from wind and solar, right? Like we're pretty much doing a pretty good job creating positions for people who want to work in renewable energy. And so, yeah, there you see a lot of job growth in that field of work, but you don't see it with coal because coal is more expensive to produce. It's harder to produce, right? And so, look, Trump is simultaneously, you know, shying away from anything that would help the environment, shying away from renewable energy, and also doing away with funding for trade schools. So if you did lose your job in a factory or if you did work in a coal mine, well, didn't he say during the election that he really wanted to hone in on trade schools and making sure that you get trained for another job, a better job? He's not doing that. He's doing quite the opposite.
I mean, half the country is living in poverty, living paycheck to paycheck. So of course they want to hear rhetoric about saving jobs, about helping the economy. To Bernie's credit, that's why Bernie was so popular, of course. But I mean, it's just so ridiculous. I just saw an op-ed in a paper from like 1913 talking about here's what's going to happen if we keep pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
I actually saw that recently.
Wow, what do you know?
Yeah.
Here we are 100+ years later, where America constitutes 5% of the world's population, consumes 25% of its energy. We have Norway and Sweden buying trash, actually importing trash to burn because they've ran out. Mm-hmm. Germany is now, you know, has only 15% of its country based on coal and nuclear. I mean, we are so far behind where we actually have a president that calls it a Chinese hoax.
Yeah.
I mean, we really need to step up our game. It's really ridiculous.
Yeah. And it goes further than saving the environment, which I would argue should be the number one priority. But if you genuinely care about job growth in America, it's not going to come from coal. It's going to come from renewable energy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And those jobs will come. The decision we have to make is if we want them to be American jobs or if we want them to be in, you know, India, Sri Lanka, China, and all that.
Yep.
And look, they could use the jobs too. Maybe it's we're doing a good service to the world by letting all those jobs go overseas.
I mean,
but it's going to happen one way or another.
Think about what happened as soon as Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord. China like got together with Germany and other countries, and they're like, "So you guys want to work together? Like, we're missing out on so many great opportunities to create jobs, and it's because we have a buffoon who's representing us right now.
But he's going to bring jobs back, you know, because that's how capitalism works. They're not going to pay. They'd rather pay workers minimum wage here than in Bangladesh, where they can pay them 15 cents an hour. It's just like Trump supporters don't understand.